When friends get together, they blether. And when these two friends happen to be Scottish Blue Badge tourist guides, you can be sure that the country that they're so passionate about will be right at the heart of their discussions.
Be it contemporary or historical, culinary or cultural, reminiscence or anecdote, from accommodation to zoos, the chat will range right across the entire alphabet of topics and issues.
We hope that you enjoy listening to our podcast and you could join in our blethers on social media. You can find us at Scottish Blethers on both Facebook and Instagram. We post additional content during the week that supports the podcast episode.
We love making the podcast and we'd love it if you could share them with your friends and maybe leave a review on the platform of your choice. There's nothing to beat a richt good blether. Hello and welcome to episode 11 of the third series of Scottish Blethers. I'm Liz Lister.
And I'm Helen Houston.
Well, it was a chilly start to the morning today, wasn't it, Helen?
I couldn't believe it when I opened up the curtains and saw snow, Liz, snow on the ground. We've just celebrated the coming of spring, we've just celebrated Easter, and we've got snow.
Yeah, we had about an inch lying. But then the opposite of that, today is very, very mild. Yeah. So, you know, it's the extremes. The weather has all gone to pot.
It is. When I took the milk in this morning, you know, there was snow lying on top of the caps and it was really lovely and cold, so nice for breakfast. And Salon Hill was white as snow because it was covered in snow. Mm. And now looking out on Salon Hill, it's just a bit patchy now.
Yes, very slushy. But hey-ho, it's April in Scotland. You know, April showers, it can be showers of snow as well as rain. But we are safe and warm inside. So today, I think most people know that we are guides by profession and in real life, and that we work for Rick Steves Europe. And we go across normally, pre-pandemic, we would go across to a conference in January. And while we were there, very often Rick would ask us to record interviews with him to go out on his radio broadcasts. And of course, we haven't been doing that, but he's now doing it virtually. And he asked us a little while ago if we would do some recordings for the Rick Steves radio channel. Or I don't know what it goes out on.
I think it's PBS.
PBS, as well, yes. As television. Also, uh-huh. Is it right? Well, whatever. Anyway, we did it. But it's very brief. There are only 11-minute segments, so it's on many topics. So we thought we'd pick up on some of the topics and expand on them a wee bit because there's so much to talk about. So the first one's castles.
Yes, and we've got a few. We've got a few castles to pick from, yes.
Yep. I mean, I think anybody that comes to Scotland, everywhere you go, they're part of the landscape. They're dotted around the whole country. And in fact, it's estimated that at one time, there were nearly 3,000 castles across Scotland. That's nearly one for every 100 square miles. So, you know, a lot of castles.
It is. And there's still, as you say, once there were nearly 3,000. But I'm sure if anybody set up a little sport called castle bagging, Monroe bagging, we might find that there probably are still about 3,000 you could find wee bits and pieces of.
Yeah, because they come in many forms. You know, if you're going out for your castle bagging, you'll see that there's lots of different styles of castle, from the ruins that are crumbling into the sea or into the ground, right up to the most wonderful stately homes. But of course, they all started out with one purpose, or the original one started out with one purpose, and that was defence.
Yes, and the most of the, and a number of them started off with defensive tower houses. So when we look at some of the bigger castles nowadays, the original structure is usually right tucked away right in the middle of it, and if it's expanded out from there. But defence, very much so, because we are a warring and warlike nation. And we still like a wee fight or two, don't we, Liz?
A good ficht, yeah. We argue a lot. So going back to in the Highlands, it would have been the clan chiefs. Down in the south, it would have been the Scottish nobles and the landowners that were awarded ground. They needed to defend it. And so they built these defensive structures in the most strategic position, whether it was by the coast or up on the highest hill or whatever. So they have very, very dramatic settings when you look at these castles nowadays.
Yes, and even then, location, location, location was always the way, built the best castles in the best locations. Don't know what their price would be, though.
Yeah, a lot of blood, sweat and tears to build them in the first place. Many of them ruined today, but some of them still standing proud as, you know, significant.
Yes, and when we get the defensive ones, but then, you know, when things became a little bit less warlike, we got some beautiful kind of, you know, castles that were almost fairy tale like in their looks. It was just been, it's a lovely variety of castles around Scotland.
Yeah, the purpose changed from being about defence and, you know, keeping your land, to all about displaying your wealth and power. So when the country became more law-abiding and we started to have a legal structure, then there was no need for defence, and so it became much more fancy.
Yes, and if we look at some of the big main defensive castles, Liz, that we've got, I mean, everybody I'm sure knows about Edinburgh Castle, and many of our listeners have probably visited Edinburgh Castle, stuck up there right on the top of the volcanic plug, just, you know, really lording it over all the rest of Scotland that it can see around about, you know, wide ratio of radius of Scotland. And then further along, you've got Stirling Castle, the same structure, the same sort of idea, but of course, much better, I have to say.
I always think it's funny that these castles that were built on the crags, you know, dominating the surrounding area, that they were designed to keep people out. But now if you look at them, they welcome millions of visitors each year. People are clamouring to get in.
I know.
So their defensive purpose is long gone.
Yes, but they're absolutely beautiful and well worth going into to see. And as I say, the difference between Edinburgh Castle and Stirling Castle is, I think, very cleverly done, in that Edinburgh Castle is still very much a military garrison. You can still see it as such. But Stirling Castle, who no longer has a military presence, has managed to sort of bring the Royal Palace and the Great Hall back to what their former glory when they were first built. And so I think that a visit to both of these is not a repeat visit. It's a really contrasting visit for two different things.
Yeah, and if anybody goes to visit Edinburgh Castle or has been, it is, as you say, a military garrison. And one of the signs of that is the famous 1 o'clock gun that we've talked about before in one of our previous episodes. But I don't know if you noticed this week, there was a bit of a stooshy in the press this week about the 1 o'clock gun, because there had been complaints on the grounds of health and safety that that they were firing from, it was too loud and that it might damage the ears of those that were standing close by. So there was at one point, there was talk about the fact that it couldn't be fired, but they've now found new shells that they can use, and they are within the tolerable level for noise on sensitive ears.
How ridiculous. It's been firing since 1861. You continuously
have health and safety in those days.
My goodness me. And the people clamour, they crowd round the gun when it's being fired. So
I think that was
really
the problem.
I think anyway.
Something else, I don't know if you noticed in the press this week, but one of the other castles that's very definitely on the tourist route is Balmoral Castle.
And yes.
It's obviously, it was the built by Prince Albert for Queen Victoria in the middle of the 19th century, but it opened up to the public in 1936, and it's still the holiday home of our royals today. I don't know if you noticed this week that there was an announcement that They're now going to open up more of the castle to visitors, because previously it's just been the ballroom and, you know, some of the a limited number of rooms. But now they're going to give tours of areas that previously weren't open to the public. But, and this is the big catch, the numbers will be very strictly limited. So can you just imagine it, Helen, trying to get a ticket for a tour of Balmoral?
I understand it's already sold out for this year.
I am absolutely sure it would have sold out within the first 10 minutes.
I think it's 40 per day are going to get a... And the cost of going on that Balmoral experience, I think it's called, is going to be £100.
Yeah.
So 40 big tickets per day. But yes, you'll get into some of the private rooms that are inside, whereas before, as you say, Liz, it's been the ballroom, which has always been a public room. Yeah. But I'm going out to Balmoral in about 2-3 weeks' time with a couple of people who want to see the castle. So we'll be in the ballroom. We're not doing the experience. We'll be in the ballroom and the grounds, which themselves are stunning.
Yeah, I mean, if you go out into the grounds, you know, so many cairns, which are the stone monuments, there's 11 of them, which each one of them commemorates some special occasion in royal history. And you can wander in the grounds and do the tour of the cairns. It's a circuit, and it takes about 2.5 hours to do that. So you don't actually have to be inside much to enjoy what the royals enjoy, which is the peace and tranquility up there in Royal Deeside.
That's right. So, and you know, Balmoral Castle, one of the first to open to the public, but now we've got so many open to the public now. And I think I would say, Liz, even since I started guiding, that the castles that are open to the public, they're putting more and better sort of aspects of it for the public to see and view. They're a better experience now.
Yeah, they're obviously an important way of making money, because these castles are not cheap to maintain. And so, you know, some families have lived in these for generations and have had inheritance tax, death tax, and so they need any money that they can get. And a good example of that is Blair Castle in Perthshire, just off the A9. So if you're travelling up to the Highlands, you'll pass a beautiful white building, often with a flag flying. And Blair Castle is home to previously the Earls of Athol, now the Dukes of Athol.
Yes, and I love that castle because not only is it very interesting inside, it's got lovely grounds, lovely and different gardens. It's got Diana's Grove, which is a lovely arboretum, and you've got the Herculean Garden, which is just beautiful gardens. So sometimes it's not a case of just running around the castle inside and running back home again. It's take time and take a picnic and go and have a lovely time in the grounds of these castles.
Yep, and Queen Victoria, she shared your passion for Blair Castle. She loved to come on holiday there. I think when she announced that she was coming, the whole place would have to be painted. However, it was a great favourite of hers. She stayed there regularly, and she was a lass for the men. And she loved the idea of Highlanders marching up and down in their kilts and preferably playing the bagpipes and waking her up in the morning to the sound of the bagpipes. So she was so taken by this that she allowed the Duke of Athol to have his own private army. And it's the only one in Europe. It's still going strong to this day. It's called the Athol Highlanders, and it's made up largely of people who work on the estate. But every year in June, there's a clan gathering of Clan Murray, and the Duke of Athol takes the salute of the Athol Highlanders.
Yes, and it's interesting now that the Duke of Athol is now, as you know, South African, because the previous Duke of Athol on the direct line, he died without heir, and they had to go back up the line, a few generations back, across the line and down through South Africa. And so the Duke of Athol now comes from South Africa, although I think the current Duke of Athol is talking of moving back into this country.
Yeah, I think he may have moved to London. I don't know. Yes. I haven't kept up to date on that. But yes, this is the idea of, you know, titles and lands that, although he has the title Duke of Athol, it's a trust that actually look after the Athol estate. So it's a sign of the times of how things change.
Yes, and I think if people are kind of wondering what we're talking about and what it is, Downton Abbey, those of you who have watched Downton Abbey, I think that gives a very, very good insight into what was going on in these castles and properties that were inherited down through generations, and what happened when the 20th century came along. And as you said earlier, Liz, the various taxes began to hit in.
Yeah, and a good example talking about Downton Abbey, for those that saw the episode where Matthew died, spoiled Christmas Day for us. When was that back in? Was it 2012? I don't know. But the episode that Matthew died, that was when the family went on holiday to their Highland relatives. And that was filmed up at Inveraray Castle, which is another of these beautiful fairy tale castles. 18th century, it's painted a lovely green colour, and it's the ancestral home of Clan Campbell. And so this is a good example of a Duke, the Duke of Argyll, who today lives in the castle with his family. They still live there for part of the year, but he's a working Duke. So he's a brand ambassador for some of the top brands like Chivas Regal and whatever. So he's a working Duke. But a lot of these Dukes had the habit of marrying into money, where they would get a good dowry.
And he's back to Downton Abbey.
Yeah, he's still no exception because he married Eleanor Cadbury of the chocolate family. So, yeah, still making astute marriages.
Yes, and Inveraray Castle, again, it's a beautiful castle with lovely grounds. And I think it is so clear when you're visiting Inveraray Castle, just that Downton Abbey didn't bring any sets or props in. It's just as it is. You can go into the rooms, you can walk in the gardens and follow in the footsteps of Lady Mary and everybody else.
Maggie Smith. Yeah, and if you want more of a defensive structure, they don't come much better than Urquhart Castle, which sits out on a promontory in Loch Ness, with Nessie standing guard swimming up and down in front of it. So it's a really good example of a strategic castle. And of course, it had plenty to defend because the Loch Ness was part of the chain of lochs across the Great Glen of Scotland. And people could literally sail right across Scotland. And the Vikings, a good example of that, when they came to a bit of land, they just put their boats above their heads, carry them on to the next loch or river that they could sail on. So this castle was constantly under threat, first of all from the Vikings and then from the west, from the Lords of the Isles, the unruly MacDonalds, Clan MacDonald, who would come and steal and raid.
Yes, and it's quite interesting because, again, as you explained, Liz, this string of lochs across the centre of Scotland, because no motorways, no roadways, the highway of the Highlands were the waterways. So that's why you have to have a defensive castle, which is almost in the centre of the country, because of the highways were the waterways. But I think poor Loch Ness, poor Castle Urquhart or Urquhart Castle began to get really fed up with all this batting back and forward between either the Vikings or the Lords of the Isles. And then, of course, the Jacobites come along. And so the Grants, who owned the castle, just said, oh, enough's enough. Packed their bags, went out, blew up the castle, said, you can have the ruin. We don't want the rest of it.
Well, lots of people come to see it today. They enjoy the sail up Loch Ness. It's, again, one of the most visited castles. But I think what people have got to realise is that there are so many beautiful castles that are not so popular and they don't have tourists clambering all over them. And there's many of them really atmospheric. I think of Tantallon Castle on East Lothian. Mary Queen of Scots was very much associated with that. And when you visit it, again, important strategic position, as you're wandering around this beautiful red castle, you can imagine Mary Queen of Scots wandering along the corridors in her black velvet.
Yes, I think that's the thing. These are kind of hidden gems, really, aren't they? The guidebooks they've found them, but they haven't kind of highlighted them. Mm-hmm. And so they're lovely. Shh, don't take too much, Liz.
Yeah. No, but again, you know, that a lot of these castles have been used for film locations, film and TV location, particularly Outlander has brought a lot of popularity to them. Black Ness Castle is a good example of that. It's on a promontory sitting out into the Firth of Forth and belonged to the Crichton family. And it's said to have the appearance of a stone ship. In fact, it's called the Ship That Never Sailed, but it was actually used as the garrison at Fort William in the Outlander series.
Yes, and I always smile to myself because Black Ness Castle is also quite a favourite wedding venue, and it's ground underfoot to get into where the weddings would take place. You're literally just clambering on rocks. So I just think about Great Auntie Jean and Granny in their heels and their best frocks, trying to clamber up these sort of wet, slippy rocks if required, but it's a beautiful situation.
Yeah, when moving from the defensive stone ship at Blackness, you come into the when they were being built for status and a display of wealth. And there's so many fairy tale castles scattered across. One of my favourites, Craigievar Castle, which is up in Aberdeenshire. And it's painted on the outside. The buildings are covered in this material called harl, which waterproofs them. And it's pink in colour. And it's got little conical turrets, and its location is just wonderful. And people claim that it was the inspiration for Cinderella, Walt Disney's Cinderella. But I think there's a lot claiming that. And I think probably Neuschwanstein Castle in Bavaria is probably the one that has the greatest claim on that.
Yes. Yes. And talking about fairy tale castles, another one of my favourite ones is Dunrobin Castle in the north of Scotland. It just sits, you just wonder how it can sit there on this cliff. It's looks almost like a French chateau looking up there. It's beautiful. And they have a falconer and they do falconry displays at Dunrobin, but these are working hawks. The falconer sets them out to scare away any kind of pigeons or swifts or swallows that might want to be nesting in the castle to try and keep it clear. So they're not there for our enjoyment only, they are working birds.
Yeah, and Dunrobin probably the greatest example of displays of wealth and status, because this was the coming together of moneyed families from Scotland and England, and they really built on a grand scale, beautiful parterre gardens that were said to be based on Versailles. And then the house itself is more like a French chateau than a Scottish building. So it is absolutely stunning.
And of course, the interiors were designed by one of our local lads, Sir Robert Lorimer, who we mentioned Edinburgh Castle, the National War Memorial is a Robert Lorimer building. The Thistle Chapel in St Giles Cathedral is a Lorimer. So he had a local, and of course, I say Fife, local to Fife, because Kelly Castle is Robert Lorimer's home.
Kelly Castle in Fife. And, you know, as you say, the interiors are just every bit as impressive as the exteriors. Fivey Castle, again, Aberdeenshire, just quite close to the town of Turriff. It has this magnificent sweeping staircase. You can just imagine Cinderella descending to the ball down this. And several of them have major art collections.
Yes, and you just look at them and think, gosh, in the day, they must have been just amazing to live in. But of course, that was when sort of people were cheap. You could have lots and lots of servants, people looking after the place. You didn't need to worry too much about that. But nowadays, I think, as we see the energy bills going up and up, I think you wouldn't be welcome. You wouldn't want to live there.
No, you need to have a good business head on you to be able to maintain your castle. And one of the good examples of that is Cawdor Castle. And there, you know, Lady Cawdor, or the Dowager Countess of Cawdor, to give her official title, she is a tremendous collector of art. And she displays that in structures in the grounds and her beautiful gardens at Cawdor.
Oh, her gardens are just lovely, and the sculptures in the grounds. But her paradise garden, I hadn't realised a paradise garden is a kind of where east meets west, and it comes from the word, a Persian word for meaning a walled garden. And when you go around Cawdor and go to her paradise garden, and white flowers in it, and white are the colours for the paradise garden, and it must have a water feature, and she's got a beautiful fountain there.
Yeah, with scallop shells all round about it. And they look as if you could pick them up, and you go to pick them up and they're stuck to the ground. Absolutely beautiful. She has such taste. But when I think of Cawdor Castle, it's going back to what you were saying earlier, Helen, about having the tower house at the centre of it from the days where it was a defensive structure. And one of the phrases that I associate with Cawdor Castle is a sharp dagger needs no ribbon. You know, these tower houses at the centre are just thick stone walls with very, very small windows. They didn't need decoration because their purpose was to keep people out, to provide safety.
Yes, and that's the other thing I like about Cawdor Castle, that the site on which it is built was chosen by a donkey.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 14th century.
Yeah.
The previous Cawdor Castle was built on a kind of a boggy bit of ground, and they got fed up with the flooding. So the Thane of Codder sent the donkey out with some gold in its back and said, look, just go and find somewhere. And the donkey lay down underneath a thorn tree, and that's where they built the castle. And the thorn tree, so they say, is still the same one that's there in the basement or in the dungeons.
But yep, they've had it tested, carbon tested, and it does date back to the 14th century. So it was all a dream that it came to him that if he allowed the donkey to wander wherever it lay down, he would have wealth and prosperity. Yeah. So lots of legends associated. And that's one of the things I think that's really interesting about these castles, you know, that they've got hidey holes and they've got secret passageways and hidden doors and all the rest of it. And they've also, in many cases, got ghosts.
Yes, lots of ghosts and quite a number of really kind of sensible feet on the ground people are saying they have seen the ghosts in these places. So, and hidden rooms which have ghosts have been all boarded up and bricked up to stop the ghosts getting out.
Yeah, lots of stories to be told around a fire. Imagine if you were staying in one of these, you know, in the drafty rooms that you'd be in. You know, you've got all, you have images of these ghost hunters on the television, but lots of them. Glam's Castle, which is very much associated with the royal family and the Queen Mother in particular, up just outside Dundee, it's particularly reputed to be haunted. At least six ghosts. And on the Rick Steves interview was talking about one of them, which was a little page boy. So it's a really sad story. He was always getting up to mischief. And in those days, it wasn't the naughty step. He was sent outside to sit on a stone seat, but they forgot about him. And it said that he froze to death and he still sticks out his foot to trip up visitors as they're walking around Glam's Castle today.
Oh, dear, that's so sad. But I think you can imagine it and understand it happening. You're all wrapped up and you're cosy inside and you forget about the wee soul outside.
Yeah. Many haunted ladies, murders have been committed within their walls. Sir John Forbes at Craigievar Castle, he was said to have a really fiery temper. He was named Red Sir John for the colour of his hair and the nature of his temper. And he was all ready for a fight and he heard giggling coming from the bedroom up above. He climbed up the stairs with his sword in his hand. He burst in and he found his daughter in bed with the son of his Gordon neighbours. They were sworn enemies. So he backed the boy up into a corner. Take your pick, choose your window. He was either the sword or jump from the fifth floor window. He jumped and fell to his death 50 feet below. And that has resulted in a restless spirit that's said to continuously haunt the bedroom of Craigievar Castle. So I won't be staying there.
No, I won't be staying there. No, but of course, apart from ghosts, many of the castles have got most beautiful gardens. We've kind of mentioned them in passing, but Drummond Castle has got beautiful gardens and they're all set out. And when Queen Victoria was visiting Drummond Castle, that's just outside Crieff, the way to see the gardens is to look down on the gardens from the top. But the original driveway into Drummond Castle came up from the bottom and you kind of past the gardens. So they changed the route of the driveway so that Queen Victoria would not see the gardens. And she came right to the top and she drove in, got out of her carriage and looked down on this beautiful, beautifully laid out gardens.
Yeah. And another one that comes to mind for gardens, Dunvegan Castle on Skye. You know, what's exceptional about these? It's a sign of the money, the wealth of these people, because they were able to take land that was infertile, you know, it was on the coast, the winds, the gales, and they were able to turn it around into gardens that today still win prizes. I mean, Dunvegan Garden Castle, it was shortlisted for Historic House's Garden of the Year in 2023. So beautiful gardens up there, vision and investment that led to these that have survived through generations.
But what I always really admire, how people can be motivated to set out these gardens in the knowledge that they won't see them at their best because it's going to take too long for shelter belts to grow and the plantings to come to maturity. I just admire their motivation in the knowledge that it will be for the next generation.
Yep, so hopefully we've inspired people to think about visits to the castles of Scotland If they come on a tour of Scotland. Nowadays, the National Trust for Scotland, which looks after our cultural heritage, it owns about 130 castles, whereas Historic Environment Scotland looks after about 65 castles. But a huge number are still privately owned, and they're being open to the public, often owned by the same family, like Fleur's Castle down in Kelso. And they're doing it to be able to preserve their heritage.
Yes, and there's a, you know, just when you do come to Scotland, don't just always think you need to go to the big hitters. But look, there are hidden gems just outside Edinburgh. Beautiful castles. Okay, they're ruins, but there's enough of the castle still standing to be able to understand its layout. But castles like Crichton Castle, going back to the late 1300s, is still there, and a big association with Mary, Queen of Scots. You've also got, again, just a few miles outside Edinburgh, a bus ride outside Edinburgh, you've got Craig Miller Castle, which very much associated with Mary, Queen of Scots and Lord Darnley. And of course, Bothwell. Crichton Castle was very much part of the Bothwells. So do try to visit some of these other ones. Crichton Castle has a beautiful wall, feature wall, which is more at home in the Mediterranean. Francis Crichton went over to the Mediterranean, over to Italy in the 16th century, and came back and built this beautiful wall with kind of like diamond-shaped bricks in it.
Yep, and you might recognise some of them if you're into Outlander or Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Lots and lots of castles have been used as locations, but you can even stay in many castles. So some of them have been bought over for the purpose of turning them into hotels and holiday homes all over the place, various standards of luxury, everything that you could possibly want. So you don't just need to visit them, you can stay in them as well. And of course, we forgot perhaps the most famous of all, Helen, the one that's on all the shortbread tins.
Of course, Ealandonan Castle.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Well, I think Ealandonan Castle, a home of the McCrays, isn't it? The McCrays and the man who brought it back to life in the early 1900s. What is it, Sir John McCrae Gilstrap or Gilstrap McCrae? Just, it's a full of everything. Again, a wee bit of an architectural sort of salvage yard at times.
Yeah, but it's setting. It's just over from Skye. It's on the mainland, but it's at the point where three lochs all meet together, and it's connected to the mainland by a little bridge. So it is absolutely stunning if you're into photography, to take some images of Ealandonan Castle. And it's been used in films as well. The World Is Not Enough, the James Bond film, and the Sean Connery Highlander. It's even been used for some of the Bollywood films. So you'll recognise these castles.
Yes, definitely. And we hope you'll come and see them. Well, Liz, that's been a lovely kind of chat through of some Scottish castles, and at least open some doors there, hopefully.
Yep. And of course, we've got words of the week, Helen. What are your words of the week?
Well, we were talking about castles there and saying some of the situations and the strategic situations sitting sort of up on the coast or out in promontories. So two words that are quite often used is the word ness. N-E-S-S for a promontory, as in Blackness Castle, sitting out in the promontory into the Firth of Forth, and many of them sitting on cliffs or crags, as we would call them in Scotland. A crag is a sea cliff, such as Killeen Castle, which we didn't really mention. Killeen Castle sits up on the sea cliffs down in Ayrshire.
Yep, strong historical links at Killeen. President Eisenhower was a regular visitor there. Again, beautiful gardens there. So many. Yeah, and I mentioned my words of the week, that's two words, hidey holes, a very popular Scottish one. You know, if you're playing a game of hide and seek, you'll look for a wee hidey hole that you can coorie into. So a little hiding place, a hidey hole.
That's good. Plenty of them in castles, isn't there?
Exactly. Secret stairways and all the rest of it. Yeah. Even some wooden legs in some of the castles as prime exhibits. You've got everything. There's everything to find. Well, we hope it inspires you, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. Thanks, Helen.
Well, thank you, Liz. And bye for now, everybody.
Bye.